From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, we're taking a look at an initiative that aims to restore Mill Creek Canyon, and in particular, a program to reintroduce the native Bonneville cutthroat trout into the Mill Creek Canyon stream. We'll speak with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources' Mike Slater to find out how and why this project is being carried out.
But if we don't do projects like this where we conserve a species where we have the opportunity and the ability to do so, we run the risk of that species, in this case the Bonneville cutthroat trout, being listed on the endangered species list.
That conversation and your summary of the day's top local headlines, just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up a little bit later on the show, a conversation about Mill Creek Canyon and conservation efforts for the Bonneville cutthroat trout. But first up, we have these headlines. Local officials have broken ground on a new library in the Marmalade District of Salt Lake City. The ceremony on Thursday took place at the corner of 500 North and 300 West, where the new library will be located. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham attended the event and filed this report.
It's been over 6 years in the making, but the Marmalade branch of the Salt Lake City Public Library is finally under construction as of Thursday, and residents of the Marmalade neighborhood, like the West High School Corral, are singing with joy. Officials who spoke at the groundbreaking billed the new library as the beginning of a redevelopment project in the area. Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker even called the library Marmalade's centerpiece.
It is part of what will be a major development here that will be mixed use. We're going to have residential, we'll have commercial. Some of it is started on the other side of the street, really, as part of this project. And we're so looking forward to getting this project both underway and completed, most importantly, for all of us to enjoy and appreciate as part of this neighborhood and part of the city.
Marmalade's library will be the seventh branch in the Salt Lake City Public Library system, and it aims to be a more dynamic space than just a repository for books. In addition to being a stimulus to the area's development, officials also envision the building as a sort of community gathering center. Architect Kevin Blaylock describes some of the facilities planned for the library.
The library will offer abundant community amenities, study rooms and meeting rooms, a cafe with a walk-up window, flexible space for recitals, film screenings, and community events, a beautiful reading terrace on the second floor that will afford views to the new park that's being developed, views to the Capitol building and the mountains to the east, and of course, views to the south of the city skyline.
On hand for the groundbreaking was Donna Jones Morris, the director of the Utah State Library Division. She says the trend towards more multi-purpose libraries like this one is an idea being embraced statewide.
A couple centuries ago, you only thought about going to a library to get a book. In the last century, there was a lot of transformation of libraries and changing of becoming more a community center where people come to do whatever the people in that community want to do. That's what the library really will do, is bring these people all together in one venue. Gives people a place to come to find information, find other people, and to share ideas.
According to Mayor Becker, Salt Lake City's redevelopment agency will begin work on major improvements to 300 West this summer. The Marmalade Library is expected to be completed by next summer. For KCPW News, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
The Bureau of Land Management has agreed to let ranchers continue grazing cattle on more than 300 square miles of northern Nevada rangeland as long as lingering drought conditions don't worsen. But some ranchers say they don't believe the temporary agreement is practical over the long term. They're taking their concerns to Governor Brian Sandoval in petitions being delivered in a Pony Express-style procession scheduled to arrive Friday in Carson City. BLM officials backed off earlier threats to force livestock off the Argenta allotment in Humboldt and Lander counties. Under a temporary agreement, grazing will continue, but with the caveat that livestock must be removed within a week after range conditions deteriorate to the point that they trigger a mandatory drought response. Battle Mountain rancher Pete Tomara says he agreed to the deal only because otherwise he'd have to sell off hundreds of cattle. And that does it for a summary of the day's top local headlines. You're listening to The Rundown. Stay with us. In the fall of 2013, a four-year, multi-phase restoration project began in Mill Creek Canyon, here in the Salt Lake Valley. In addition to doing watershed restoration, the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, working in conjunction with the U.S. Forest Service and several nonprofit and corporate partners, is removing non-native fish and replacing them with native Bonneville cutthroat trout, which at one point were thought to be extinct. Today we're joined by Mike Slater, the Division of Wildlife Resources Regional Aquatics Program Manager, to talk about the history of the cutthroat and to learn more about how projects like this are carried out as well as why they are carried out. Mike Slater, thanks for coming in and taking the time today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So I thought we could start with a quick overview of what the project is and why you're doing it.
Okay. Mill Creek. It's right in the back of a million people's backyards, if you will. And there's fish in the stream right now, a combination of rainbow trout, brown trout, some cutthroat trout. But we as a Division of Wildlife, as well as many other entities, are interested in conserving the native Bonneville cutthroat trout. And in efforts to do that, we've picked locations like this where historically the Bonneville cutthroat trout was the species in that stream. We would like to make that happen again. In order to do so, we're going to remove the fish that are there currently and replace them with the native Bonneville cutthroat trout. And in order to do this, it's going to take a few years for us to split the canyon up a little bit, if you will, and make this all happen.
I know that the Forest Service has a hand in this project, too. There's a habitat restoration and enhancement portion of the project. The Forest Service began its part of the project last summer by pulling out a bridge, replacing some culverts, and doing habitat restoration work along the creek. Why was that necessary?
There's a lot of things that are coming into this project from different angles. You mentioned the habitat restoration. In a stream setting, the fish, we want to allow those fish to move freely up and down the system as much as possible. So some of the habitat work that the Forest Service already began is to make that possible. There may be some culverts that are in place where it creates a barrier, if you will. The fish cannot make it up and over that particular culvert. So that was removed, again, to enhance the overall aspects of the project and make it as good as possible for these cutthroat.
That free movement of the cutthroat, do they, you know, move upstream to breed or anything like that?
Typically, they'll move upstream. They'll try and find a place that's suitable for them that has the appropriate gravels and things where they can lay their eggs and they'll have better survival. In fact, if you take it a step further, originally when Lake Bonneville was here, that's where these Bonneville cutthroat trout lived a big portion of their life, and then they would run up these tributaries to spawn and then return back into that lake environment.
Wow.
So we've kind of, obviously, we removed that, but we're trying to maintain as much as possible. But those fish will move up and downstream to find that best habitat.
How long are these phases of restoration, and how long is this project going to run, and when did it start?
Okay, we started last year, 2013, and we've broken the canyon up into three different sections, and this is for lots of different reasons. We've started at the top, we've removed the fish from the upper couple of miles, and then we'll move down. This year, we'll treat both that top section one more time to assure that everything has been removed effectively, and then we'll add the middle section of the canyon and remove the fish from that portion. Immediately following that, we will be putting the Bonneville cutthroat trout back into that top portion of the stream, which we will not be doing anything with again.
Right, in terms of treatment of...
As far as using that rote known to try and remove the fish that are currently there, yes.
I think we have to talk about that for a second. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. you could give our listeners an idea of what rote known is and how it's used and what it does.
Sure. Rotenone is a natural substance that comes from the root of a tropical plant in the bean family. And what it does is it inhibits the fish's or a gilled organism in general the ability to utilize the oxygen that's in the water. It's not removing that oxygen. It just makes it so the fish can no longer use that oxygen. And it's been used for decades as a fish management tool. Historically, if you go back even further, indigenous people in the tropics used it to essentially harvest fish, grind that root plant up, put it in the water, and retrieve the fish that come belly up.
Has this already happened in one section of the stream as it is, and so you've eliminated the species that are there that aren't native, and that's been done in one section of Mill Creek already?
Correct. About the upper 2 to 3 miles of stream, it took place last year. Again, I mentioned we'll go back in this year to retreat that one more time, because if we leave any of those species there, we run the risk of hybridization or the invasive species breeding with the native Bonneville cutthroat trout, and then you lose the whole goal of the project to bring the native fish back.
What are the, so you mentioned a little bit, you talked about hybridization, but what are the species that are in there now that you're trying to get rid of, and how do they get there?
We have rainbow trout, brown trout, and some cutthroat, as well as cutthroat rainbow hybrids that are there now. And they've been placed there by the Division of Wildlife, again, decades ago, maybe before we knew as much as we know now about conservation and the importance of conserving particular species, in this case, the native Bonneville cutthroat trout. So we're trying to remove those species from the system, just in this particular system, so that it can be an effective project so that we can effectively restore the Bonneville cutthroat trout to Mill Creek.
And they were, I mean, they were stocked for sport fishing and things like that? Is that the idea?
Primarily for sport fish reasons, yeah, for people to go up and see or catch or utilize in that way.
But the, I mean, I'm wondering, were the rainbow or brown trout, I mean, are they non-native species?
Rainbow trout, brown trout, none of those are native to Utah.
That's interesting. And they come, where do they come from?
Yeah, the brown trout originally is from Germany, is where the brown trout generally comes from. And then the rainbow trout is from the Northwest here in the United States. The most common species that you'll see in most reservoir streams throughout, not just Utah, but throughout the nation is the rainbow trout, because it has been domesticated, if you will. It's been raised for over 100 years for the purpose of sport fishing opportunities and stocked everywhere.
What is it that led to the decline of the, or the depletion of the cutthroat trout? Was it the stocking of these other species, or was the cutthroat already in decline? Maybe we could talk about that, how the Bonneville cutthroat and other cutthroat trout began to vanish.
Yeah. There's a few things that we could talk about, or several reasons, but maybe a couple that we would mention. One we've already alluded to, and that's the hybridization with, say, the rainbow trout and the cutthroat. They both spawn at the same time in the spring of the year, and when they get together, obviously you're going to lose that genetic integrity or purity. Another thing would be the utilization of the water, how we in the West use water, irrigation purposes, culinary purposes. Lake Bonneville's no longer here. They don't have that lake environment and then a stream hooked to it anymore. Once you get to the bottom of the, most of these canyons along the Wasatch Front, they're diverted for various reasons, and they lose the water. So the fish are now trapped in these headwater streams, basically. And then just the habitat. We've done a lot with the streams. We've got roads going up every one of these canyons. We've got different activities that we pursue, lots of different things that take place in an urban setting, which has contributed to the decline of the cutthroat trout.
Do we have a sense of the historic levels of cutthroat trout?
Yeah, you can look back through some old documents, whether it be newspaper ads or journals or things like that, when the settlers first came to Utah. And you can see places like Utah Lake full of Bonneville cutthroat trout. So we know that they were in a lot of places throughout the state years and years ago. One thing that I would just mention is the fact that how much progress has been made with the Bonneville cutthroat trout over the recent decades. Probably about the mid-70s is when the cutthroat were noticed or realized that, hey, we do have some Bonneville cutthroat trout here and there. And a lot of efforts since that time has taken place to reestablish the Bonneville cutthroat trout in their historic range, places such as Mill Creek, Parley's Canyon, a few places just right here near the Salt Lake Valley.
In this Mill Creek project, are you guys reintroducing any other species after you're clearing the stream of the invasive species?
Yes, we are. This is kind of a unique opportunity for us. Typically, you'll go in and you'll just put that cutthroat trout back in, and that's all we worry about. There's a lot of value to that fish in particular, whether it be from sport fish or conservation alone. We would like to create a completely native system, aquatic system, to where we'll put the Bonneville cutthroat trout in, as well as some other species such as dace, maybe some sculpin, perhaps leatherside chub. A few species that we believe were originally in portions of Mill Creek. So essentially, you'll be able to go from Salt Lake City here to a system that is completely native, but yet still provides that unique opportunity for sport for some of the fish.
Something that just occurs to me now is why this decision to create or to recreate the native ecosystem. I mean, is it a desire to be more natural? I guess maybe these species do better here, or what's sort of the need there? Tell us about that.
I think it's important. I would step back to one thing that we're working under, and that's called the Endangered Species Act. We don't want to lose any species for lots of different reasons, and that can be debatable as to what those reasons really are. But if we don't do projects like this where we conserve a species where we have the opportunity and the ability to do so, we run the risk of that species, in this case the Bonneville cutthroat trout, being listed on the endangered species list. Then the management opportunities, the public's opportunities to, whether it be utilize this fish, see this fish, participate, whatever, may be removed, because then there's other restrictions on what can and cannot be done with that particular body of water. So in my mind, it really makes a lot of sense to do what we can if we can. And the Bonneville cutthroat trout is not going to be listed on the endangered species list because of these kind of activities.
Thinking about the reintroduction of this particular species, you're putting these cutthroat trout into the stream, but where are they coming from?
We have a native population. We call it a brood source, and it's in Parley's Canyon in Little Dell and Mountain Dell reservoirs. Genetics have been tested on these particular cutthroat in these two lakes, and they've been found to be pure Bonneville cutthroat trout. So that is our source. Every spring, in fact, it's happening as we speak, we're going up and we're collecting those eggs from those fish. We rear them in a hatchery setting until they're large enough for us to then put into places like Mill Creek or other lakes for sport fish opportunities. So it's really important for us to protect places like that so that we have a source that we can then, again, expand the range and where we have these Bonneville cutthroat trout.
Let's. I want to get back into a discussion about the use of rotenone. So you mentioned that it comes from this this bean plant, and that it was used by native populations, and that this is the way that you clear the streams. Trying to understand the arguments against rotenone, we came across some papers about phytoplankton populations possibly being damaged, or zooplankton populations being damaged. Are there long-lasting effects to an ecosystem from the use of rotenone?
You know, really, it's pretty short-lived. And in this particular system where we're dealing with the stream, we wouldn't have the things such as the zooplankton and some of that kind of stuff. That's more in a lake environment. We may have an impact on some of the macroinvertebrates or the bugs that you'll see in the streams. But again, we're taking precautions to limit that. We're treating it at as a low concentration as possible. Roughly one part per million is what we treat at, and that will effectively remove the trout species, the target species that we're after. And another thing that we're doing is we're not treating 100% of the stream. For example, the very upper portions of Mill Creek Canyon is fishless. So we are not going up into there with the rotenone. We're going to allow the macroinvertebrates, the bugs, the things up there to drift down and feed the systems that we are removing the fish from. And it's very short-lived. Those bugs will recolonize in the affected sections of the stream very, very quick. In fact, when I go back to put in the fish this fall in that upper reach, I will do it within 2 weeks to 4 weeks from the time of the treatment. There will be enough drift that takes place and moves down into there that fast. There's other methods to try and remove fish, but nothing is nearly as effective and a lot of times not practical at all or not possible, such as what we call mechanical removal. We could go in with nets, with electricity, with different gear and try and remove every fish we possibly can. But over time and the studies that have been done, it's never 100%. You can't effectively go and remove everything by just looking for the fish or trying to catch the fish.
So this is the sort of settled upon method then?
It is. This really is the proven method that we can remove all the species, and especially in a conservation effort, we can't have any of those fish left before we introduce the Bonneville cutthroat.
Does it kill? I'm just wondering, does rotenone kill anything other than the fish?
It does. It affects gilled organisms.
Okay.
We alluded to the macroinvertebrates or the bugs. Many of those bugs that are in the streams, they breathe underwater. They have gills. And so they will be affected to a varying degree, depending on where they're at and how long they're exposed to this. The rotenone itself is only in the water for a matter of hours. It doesn't take very long before the fish are affected and we can effectively remove them from the system. So this isn't a days or weeks or months project that we're working on. This is a matter of hours, literally.
You talk about fish and gilled organisms. What are there other fish species living in Mill Creek aside from these invasive species?
Other than the ones that we've mentioned, the brown trout, the rainbows, and the cutthroat and hybrids, with the rainbows, those are the only fish species that we've found in Mill Creek. Mm-hmm. Now, again, historically, I'm quite certain that there would have been other species, but due to our practices, you know, the number of wooden mills, other things that we've done in the canyon, we've removed the fish. Man has done that, and so we're trying to kind of take a step back and replace what we've removed years and years ago.
Okay, so you've completed one phase. Have you reintroduced Bonneville cutthroat into Mill Creek at any part yet?
Not yet. That will take place this fall, the fall of 2014, in the top portion of Mill Creek Canyon.
What happens to the dead fish that are, you know, when you're clearing out the stream using the rotenone?
As part of the project, we don't want to leave the fish just laying there. It might become somewhat sightly for some people.
Sure.
And so we've got the Trout Unlimited volunteers that have been a great help to us to actually remove all of those dead fish again as the project is happening. Now, years and years ago, to be honest, when we would conduct a project like this, the fish were left in the system. Those nutrients would return back into the system. But for various reasons, we don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain segments of the public don't want to see that. And so that's why we will go in and actually remove the fish, take them to a landfill, or dispose of them properly.
Mm.
The numbers that we're talking, the first 3 miles or so that we did last year, we may have collected a couple thousand fish, 2,000 to 3,000 fish. And these, again, are varying from size from very, very small fish up to maybe 11, 12 inches.
Weird question, but could they be used as fertilizer?
Technically speaking, I guess they could. But due to, you know, the use of a chemical, I hate using that word, but technically that's what we're using. It just scares people. And so to alleviate any kind of concerns, we'll just dispose of them rather than taking that chance. Historically, as we talked earlier, people would eat the fish. They would use the rotenone to kill the fish and then eat those fish. But that's not the common practice today.
One of the concerns that we'd heard about rotenone is that it has a smell. Maybe we could talk about that being one of the concerns that people have about the use of this chemical. And then also, can we talk about how long it remains in the river system?
Yeah, rotenone, in order to get it to mix with the water, it has to be put in with some emulsifying agents or different things. And some of these are petroleum-based. They're actually developing newer ideas, newer formulations every year almost, it seems. This last year, we used a new one that doesn't have the smell that's typically associated with those agents that you mix the rotenone with. It's actually not the rotenone that you're smelling. It's the stuff that's mixed with the rotenone so that it can, again, mix with the water. So the stuff last year, and as a biologist, we're used to using the stuff, and we can tell when it reaches our spot or our location because we could smell it. Well, this last year, it's like, the fish are being affected, but I can't smell it yet. Is it really here? Is it happening?
Huh.
And so maybe we're removing some of those concerns or some of those issues that people have raised in the past.
And then, how long does it stay in a river system? Does it just moves downstream and is gone? Is that the idea, or where does it go?
Yeah, what we're doing is we want to have a certain amount of contact with those fish so that we make sure that they've been affected in the desirable manner. So we're looking at between 4 hours. To 6 hours in this particular stream. Now, other environments, lakes or larger rivers, it might be a little bit longer. And we only want to affect a certain portion of the river.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier that we're splitting the river up into different sections.
Yeah.
Well, we've actually put certain locations where we are neutralizing that rotenone to where it will have no effect downstream from a particular point.
And you do that by adding something that actually neutralizes its effect. What is it that does that?
It's an oxidizing agent. It's called potassium permanganate. And so really, that's probably what people are going to notice more than anything on a project like this because it turns the water a purple color.
Huh.
So from that point where we no longer want the rotenone to be effective, we'll put in enough of this potassium permanganate to neutralize or oxidize that water again and remove any kind of impacts from that point downstream. And it only stays purple until that water, again, is diluted enough. It might be a quarter of a mile, and then it's back to normal.
Thinking if the potassium permanganate has any effect itself on the ecosystem.
It doesn't. It breaks down into potassium and manganese, which are both common in nature, and so there really is no effect on anything else. It doesn't affect groundwater, springs, what you and I would do with the water. It really is a good agent for us to use to neutralize the rotenone.
Mike Slater is the Division of Wildlife Resources Regional Aquatics Program Manager. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
We had to shorten this interview with the DWR's Mike Slater for broadcast, but you can find a full version at kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and this is The Rundown. We'll be right back. Thanks again for tuning into our show today. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Ryan Cunningham, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in each weekday at 5 for an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you on The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks again for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.